This is a Times Online podcast.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 117 of The Bugle for the week beginning Monday, the 7th of June, 2010. Brought to you this week in association with The Bugle's commercial sponsors, Alibi, for deceits you can't beat. Purchase the perfect legally watertight stay-out-of-jail card with our 99% verifiable cover stories, then say goodbye with a convincing and exciting new identity. And X-Ray, the latest project from Kitchen Gizmo makers Cook Blast, a full medical-quality CT scanner perfectly shaped to fit around a standard hen's egg to let you analyse your egg as it boils, ensuring the perfect breakfast every time. And Cat Splat, the perfect memento for pet owners. Send us the cadaver of your dead cat and we will steamroller it flat to become a tasteful but moving wall hanging. So those are the Bugle's commercial sponsors this week. You know, it's all about the dollar. I'm Andy Zaltzman here in London, and in the city where donkeys fear to tread, New York, it's John Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. Brought to you by Cat Splat. Andy, I met the descendant of a legend this week. I met the granddaughter of W.C. Fields.
Really?
Yeah, it's a huge honour. I was at a screening of one of his films, Million Dollar Legs. Which, incidentally, you would love, Andy.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's total mayhem. Nothing but incredibly stupid jokes. It's all based around this fictional country, Klopsokia. And it opens with a title page about this country saying, Chief Export, Goats and Nuts. Chief Import, Goats and Nuts. Chief Inhabitants, Goats and Nuts. That's a 78-year-old stupid joke, Andy, that is still stupid today. What a heartwarming thing to realise. The most inspirational thing about the whole movie was that it was made in 1932 during the Great Depression. And I love the idea that the writers and a movie studio got together and thought, I know exactly what America and the world needs right now. A frankly ridiculous movie about goats where every single female character is called Angela for no fathomable reason. It's great, Andy. You'd love it. It's unbelievably stupid.
Okay. I can't remember if I've ever talked about this on the Bugle before. And stop me if I have. But I saw a production of Aristophanes' Frogs in Athens when I was on holiday there about 3 years ago, which was 2,500-year-old jokes still going down well.
Yeah. It's pretty
inspiring.
Yeah. And those were pretty stupid jokes as well, though, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, lots of jokes about people soiling themselves.
Yeah, it gives you a real belief in humanity. I guess we've always been stupid, and it's important that we continue to be stupid.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure people will be listening to the Bugle in 2,500 years' time thinking, wow, it's just as relevant today as it ever was.
Well, they'll be right, but not for the reason they think.
Well, this is... The Bugle might still be going. You know, there could be descendants of ours...
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. And I'd love to make this Bugle hereditary.
Yeah.
Inflict our descendants with this, Andy.
So let's just work out how many Bugles that would be 2,500 years' time. Say, well, let's go on an average of, what, 40 a year?
Sure.
So people in will be listening to Bugle 64,117. I'm thinking, God, it's nearly as good as it used to be.
And it really has not matured.
So this is Bugle 117, meaning that if you made a bacon, egg and sausage roll representing each full episode of The Bugle, you would have enough rolls to give a free breakfast to 58.5 people. And as always, some sections of The Bugle are going straight in the bin. This week, a house and home section, including give your house a charming old-style medieval feel with some reclaimed wooden beams, a lovely open fireplace, and by getting rid of your lavatory and defecating out of the window onto the street below. Plus a feature on how to tidy your house. As a basic rule, if you've not used something for a year, chuck it out. So get rid of those unneeded things that just clutter the place up that you never use. Like, for example, unwanted tabards, unicycles, wives, children, those crocodile shoes you've got made of real crocodiles that you've never quite had the guts to wear out in public for fear of what the PC Brigade would say. But you've kept them well fed and watered in the spare bathroom, so it's not so bad for them. But time to go. Out too with the Steve Redgrave rowing machine, an exercise aid in the shape of Steve Redgrave that works out your cardiovasculars by shouting a selection of inflammatory personal insults at you that make you lose your temper and shout back. So sorry, that's the Steve Redgrave rowing machine. I'm here all week. In the bin. That's in the bin.
Top story this week, Israel update. Andy, the sun may rise, the sun may set, the leaves may bud and fall, but a few things will remain constant in all our lives. The Japanese will always love cartoon monsters, that and unsettling pornography. Two, Kenya will always produce world-class distance runners. And three, Israel will have a tendency to, out of nowhere, do something f***ing crazy, incredibly frustrating, and that does nothing to further their image or cause worldwide. And this week was no different from any other week. As you may have heard, 9 people died and 30 were wounded when Israeli troops boarded or stormed a flotilla of ships carrying aid to Gaza. And that last sentence is indicative of what you're dealing with here. Even describing the act is now controversial. No one can even agree on the semantics of the circumstances. The Israelis say they boarded the ship, though, to be fair, I don't think that you can grammatically be described as boarding anything when you're ziplined down from a helicopter with a loaded machine gun. I've never heard a train conductor say, "All aboard!" before diving for cover as some last-minute passengers crashing through the ceiling, opening fire on anything that moves.
Yeah, well, it does seem that the Israeli military have still not quite mastered the arts of public relations. And this, I think, is certain to go down in history as a bit of a blooper, John, whatever the semantics turn out. But it is a gaffe, and I guess, you know, I mean, the problem for Israel is that large parts of the world consider pretty much everything they do to be a bit of a blooper, and some of the angry bits of the world consider their entire existence to be a blooper itself. Right. So I guess they get used to it, and Israel has very much reacted as if to say, oh, well, shit happens. And admittedly, the Israeli government does seem to often go out of its way to make that shit happen, but still. The T-shirt slogan stands, John.
It's still their go-to follow-up comment.
Yeah.
Both sides quickly released their own heavily edited videos of the event. The Palestinian video showed gunshots and the bleeding bodies of unarmed passengers. The Israeli video showed the soldiers being set upon by baseball bats and metal bar-wielding activists and stops just before the shooting begins. Both directors, essentially, have their own visions of how the final cut should be, Andy.
Yep.
And what this situation clearly needs is for a major studio like the UN to step in and take the edit away from both sides. Just release something that's commercially viable.
Right.
But one thing is for sure, from both of the videos, you don't want to be anyone in it. I would not want to be on the ship, having Mossad agents raining down on top of me, and I would certainly not want to be an Israeli soldier about to have an angry crowd try to beat the shit out of me. You know, what was in the ships that necessitated this commando raid? Well, they were carrying 10,000 tons of goods, including school supplies, building materials, and 2 large electricity generators. So, to be fair to the Israelis, Andy, they didn't know that. They didn't know that what was in there. To be fair to the ship in question, they were in international waters. You know, so, but hold on, to be fair to the Israelis, they may have been concerned that there were materials to make weapons in there, but again, to be fair to the ship, they weren't expecting a scene from a bad Steven Seagal movie. So, who's right here? Well, the answer closer to the truth is neither of them are right. You could argue that sailing a flotilla of ships to break the Gaza blockade was a provocative act, sure, but you could also argue that the blockade itself is a f*** of a lot more provocative, Andy. I mean, you don't really get much more provocative than being contained in a strip of land without enough food or supplies.
Yeah, but John, this is just typical anti-Israelism you're perpetrating.
Okay.
Because,
I mean,
there's a reason.
Right.
There's a reason for this blockade, John.
Oh, right.
And that is Israel are trying to end the culture of dependency that is holding so many people in Gaza back, just relying on aid. You know, they're helping them to help themselves, to make their own medicine, instead of relying on international donors to make them magically better, to grow their own food on their own patches of bombed-out rubble. You know, if Canada can manage to grow their own food, John, why can't Gaza? You know, and it's tough love, John.
I've never thought
about it that way. It's tough love.
The Gaza blockade itself is at best a deeply flawed security measure, and at worst, a flagrant trampling over basic human rights. Even UN Chief Ban Ki-moon, Andy, whose very job is to shamefully underreact to every single global event. That's his job. It's in his contract. Even he calls the siege of Gaza counterproductive, unsustainable, and wrong. That's Ban Ki-moon saying that, Andy. That's the equivalent of anyone else saying, holy f*** balls, this is just turbo bullshit.
But see, he said that. He said, counterproductive, unsustainable and wrong. And Netanyahu replied, yeah, well, he would say that. Besides, he's just a secretary, probably just some gossiping overheard at the coffee machine. And anyway, you can't spell counterproductive, unsustainable and wrong without ban. You are a stupid UN c***. So there's always to and fro in these arguments, John.
You're right, there's both sides. You have to take the broader perspective. But the more you read about this story, the more you want to slam your head through the newspaper or laptop screen that you're reading it on. Incidentally, that, by the way, if nothing else, is a good argument for the continuation of print journalism. It's a lot cheaper and safer to smash your head through the stories you're reading. But one such frustrating detail here came from Captain Ari Shalakar of the Israeli Defense Forces, who revealed that the commandos began the raids aimed with paintball guns. He said, it's true that the Israeli commander unit came on board with paintball weapons in order to disperse people if there was violence. They were ready for a violent demonstration on board the flotilla, especially on the big boat, the Marmara. No one really expected that there would be such a violent outcome, though, of what happened. Really? How do you expect them to react to having paintballs shot at them? For a start, paintballs really, really hurt, Andy. And also, why would you trust that they were using paintball guns? You just dropped in from fucking helicopters. They're not going to give you the benefit of the doubt in that situation. It's not like they thought you were a bachelor party that had got lost. Oh, don't worry, it's Dave's last day of innocence. Let him shoot himself out. He went on to say, first, you know, the soldiers tried to disperse, but in the end, when they were shot at, you know, when they were shooting from the other side, there's no other way than turning from paintball to live ammunition. And I'm sure that's true. And what is live ammunition anyway, Andy, than a paintball simply covered in lead with the paint taken out? Joke backfiring news now. And a joke party in Iceland, Andy, has been elected into local office. The best party ran on a campaign of free towels at swimming pools, Disneyland at the airport, and a new polar bear for the zoo. And they now govern part of Reykjavik.
Why wouldn't you vote for that, John?
I know. Listen, Andy. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it happened.
Yeah.
The best party, founded by comedian John Nahr, secured 34.7% of the vote ahead of the Independence Party's 33.6%. Their campaign video was set to Tina Turner's Simply the Best and featured lyrics such as, we want a city that's cuddly and clean and cool and top-notch stuff, such as a general rule. And later on, economy-wise, we only need one Santa. That just makes sense, Andy. That's just flat-out fiscal common sense there. There's only supposed to be one. Forget the franchise. At this point, it isn't fiscally viable. So now...
And another line, actually, from that was this. Yeah. The blathering loons should be given a home in the city zoo. Which, you know, is a real broadside at politicians and also quite a good cryptic crossword clue.
So now the joke, this joke party, has boomeranged back a bit on comedian John Nahr, who now finds himself with 6 seats in the 15-member council and an electorate who are going to quickly start asking where their new polar bear is and why Daffy Duck was not at the airport to greet them when they got back from holiday.
It's like the Liberal Democrats all over again.
Exactly. He's made a critical mistake by actually running for office, and the public have very wisely called his bluff on that shit. Listen, we talk a lot of bullshit on the Bugle, Andy. I think we'll both be first to
Happy
accept
to.
That. Happy we always to. Critically make sure that we're just smart enough not to actually put our names on any ballot papers. That's the one safety net you always need to have, because you never want to find yourself underestimating how childish people actually are and that they're actually capable of making your joke backfire in, if not a permanent way, certainly a several-year term way.
So, because opposition politicians had encouraged voters during the campaign not to put Reykjavik, quotes, in the hands of clowns, and the voters responded.
Yeah.
Ad voters generally respond to politicians nowadays by putting Reykjavik in the hands of clowns.
Yeah.
And these clowns, the best party, or bestie Flokkurin, I'll best your Flokkurin if you're not careful, founded just a year ago on the promise not to honour any of its promises and on a pledge to be
very
openly
clever.
Corrupt.
Very clever.
Rather than covertly corrupt. So it's getting all above board, John.
It's a refreshing change coming to Reykjavik.
And it's the latest shot across the bowels of democracy after the UK election, of course, in which every single party managed to lose,
right.
After voters electing dead mayors in America and Romania, and after back in 1958, a city council election in Sao Paulo, Brazil, was won by a rhinoceros. And also before that, the people of Jabal Tau voted in a goat called Stinky. What is it
true?
With Brazil and people voting for animals? These what are both largely true.
What did Stinky campaign on, Andy?
I don't know. He was just goats. I don't know. I guess he campaigned on grazing for stuff.
Fair enough.
I don't know.
At least it's setting achievable goals.
Yep. And in 1988, a chimpanzee came third in the Rio de Janeiro mayoral election. And Lula da Silva was only re-elected as president in 2006 because he campaigned in a pantomime duck outfit. Or was it a badly fitting suit? It's hard to tell these days, John, but the point stands.
I mean, this is, as you say, clearly the Icelandic electorate who have watched their country literally go bankrupt and nearly take down the entire EU with them, getting sick and tired of their politicians and deciding to protest in a petulant and entirely counterproductive way. But good luck to them. In fact, even one Israeli commentator said this last week, Andy, of Israeli politics, my six-year-old son could do a better job. And he might not actually be fair wrong, Andy. It might be worth giving his six-year-old son a go over there. Although I will say that storming a ship with commando troops is exactly the kind of thing that a six-year-old boy would be interested in doing. Especially the day after he officially state-banished the concept of bedtime. He's cranky and commandos are cool. What? He's left with no choice.
Maybe that's what happened. Maybe it's little Jackie Netanyahu pulling the strings behind
the
scenes.
Yeah, saying, I want to play with my boats.
Well, I guess, you know, sometimes, and I know this only too well myself, you know, in parenting, you do give in just to keep your child quiet. Maybe that's what happened.
Lou Reed and dog news now, Andy.
It's about time we address this subject, John.
God, I've waited so long to say that sentence out loud. Andy, if you liked Lou Reed before, and I know you did, get ready to like him a whole lot more, because Lou Reed and his artist wife, Laurie Anderson, are going to stage a high-frequency concert for dogs. And that's something that's actually going to happen, Andy. It's not just a sentence that someone thought correctly was funny. Music for Dogs is going to be held outside the Sydney Opera House and is being billed as an interspecies social gathering on a scale never seen before in Australia. Hold on. That seems to imply there's a precedent for this. What's been going on in Australia? Have they been regularly staging small-scale dog concerts featuring ex-members of the Velvet Underground? Who can forget John Cale's intimate evening electronica for chihuahuas? Or Maureen Tucker's drumming for dachshunds? Such magical evenings.
I like this interspecies social gathering.
Yeah.
You know, how do they know? Australia's been there a long time. Who knows, in the mist of prehistory, maybe there was a great big kangaroo and platypus table tennis competition that we now know nothing about.
Yeah, you
know, it's rather cocky to suggest that this is the best ever.
It's hard to know what they're doing down there.
Yeah. But, of course, some critics have said that Lou Reed is now finally crossing the line between unlistenable and inaudible, which is a fine but important line in music. And, of course, there hasn't been a lot of frontline popular music for dogs ever since Kate Bush's Wuthering Heights. So it's a big, big step forward for the canine music fans.
The concert this month will, obviously, be largely inaudible to the human ear. And are we absolutely sure that Lou Reed is actually going to be playing music, Andy? This seems like an Emperor's New Clothes situation. Could it be that Lou Reed had an unexpectedly large tax bill and he's going to stage some quick fake dog concerts to raise some money fast? Laurie Anderson said that the inspiration for the performance came to her during the Vivid Live Festival in Sydney when she was backstage at an event and thought, wouldn't it be great if you're playing a concert and you look out and all you see are dogs?
I've had gigs like that.
Well, that's it. It's a phenomenal thought to have. I personally have often felt that during gigs. Wouldn't it be great if this entire theatre was just dogs?
It would explain why they weren't laughing. Just didn't understand.
I just hope that these dogs in Sydney know what they're getting themselves into, Andy. This is not your Lionel Richie's music for dogs. This is Lou f***ing Reed. This is going to be some willfully avant-garde dog music. Those canines are going to be a split crowd. Just be prepared. Most of them are going to get it. Some are going to be confused. A hardcore few are going to absolutely love it. Some are going to pretend to like it. And statistically, some are going to urinate and defecate publicly during it. Let's just all accept what's about to happen.
This isn't the first time there's been music for dogs, though. In 2007, New Zealand's Christmas number one chart single was a hit called A Very Silent Night, which is a charity single audible only to dogs, apparently. That raised
Hold on, is
several...
that true?
Yeah.
I just presumed you were
lying. And a spokesman said that not all dogs had reacted that well to it. Quotes, the most violent one was a dog that physically attacked the radio when it was played and went quite berserk and totally destroyed it. So got it, who knows what the lyrics were? Maybe it was, cats are great, dogs are shit. And I just snap like that.
Cats are great. What are you going to do about it, dogs? You're going to tag a radio?
We know that dogs are sensitive about these things as a species.
Yeah.
But I have to say, John, I bet Lou Reed's wife couldn't believe it when he broke the news to her they were going to do this concert. I mean, she must have had to pinch herself. I mean, she must have shook her head.
No.
Yep.
Oh, no, I think I can see what's happening.
Strap
here,
in here. Yep. She mastiff had to pinch herself. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Concert for dogs, Lou, she said. I know you're avant-garde, but what's the point of that? But Lou Reed soon set her straight. He said, shh, now's a time and a place for complaining. This is a great opportunity for us, dear. Our terrier, we can't bass it up. I'll put a band together and whip it into shape. Okay, she said, but make sure it's a cosmopolitan band. Get an English guy on drums and someone from Tehran on rhythm guitars. Hang on, love, I'll just write that down. Pom, Iranian. Anyone else? Yep, for backing vocals, get the lead singer from that influential synth-pop band Kraftwerk and maybe that famous American actress and occasional singer who starred in Moonlighting. Okay, German, Shepherd. And on drums, hang on, interrupted Lou Reed, Dax and Duff. The preparations then began. They started to pack their bags. Lou
How
said,
did that not stop at that point? How did that not stop when you inhaled?
Lou said, oh no, I can't find that lovely knitted sweater I bought when I did that gig in Dublin. Laurie, his wife, soon located it. Here it is, Lou. Irish wool found. By the way... by the way, did you find our annoying neighbour's skillet that you borrowed? F***ing Charles Spann. Yeah, I'll take it round later. Did that quite work?
No.
King Charles Spann,
No, it didn't. No.
Make sure him or his missus is there when you give it back. Dow may sure no one can say we've still got it. Soon Laurie was ready to go. Hawkeye, do you mind if I tell my friend?
Shame on you.
You know the lady from number 35 who you really don't like? What? Shih Tzu? I wish you wouldn't call her that, dear.
Okay,
it's very rude.
Okay.
And anyway, why don't you like her? Well, because she talks rot while her huge husband scares me. I mean, he's a big old bastard. Big old bastard.
No.
Last time you told her about one of my gigs, she just talked about it endlessly at work. She really bored her colleagues. They climbed into their car. To go to the airport to Australia. Wow, said Laurie. I've had such a great day. It's only still lunchtime. Hang on, said Lou suddenly. We better do some publicity for this gig. Can I borrow $20 for some posters for it? Sure, pay me back next week, replied his wife. And get me a box of chocolates to say thanks. My purse is on the back seat. I'll just ridge back and get it. Have you told any of your old music buddies about it? Has Keith Richards called? Keith Richards. No, said Lou, but I told ex-Velvets drummer Maureen Tucker all about it. I really talked it up.
Second appearance from Maureen Tucker. It's beautiful.
Oh, I really talked it up, said Lou. Jawawa. Sure did wow her. She was well impressed, said Lou. I'm so excited about this gig. If it goes well, I want to take the show to dogs all around the world. Well, let's just see how it goes first, love, cautioned his wife. Don't start thinking about an elaborate tour. Elaborate tour. Mm-hmm. Not yet. I mean, it's going to be a logistical challenge anyway. I mean, for a start, wouldn't I have to clean the auditorium? Not after a crowd of dogs has poodled over it. And if any promoter asks you to do a gig for cats, I'd be hesitant. I'll say shun that offer. Suddenly, Lou slammed on the brakes. Cripes! That Indian chef just spilt a load of melted butter on the road.
Oh, yeah?
That was close. Core. Ghee. This is the last thing I wanted to see. As they pull into the airport.
Ah, no! Sorry. Hold on. Before you get going at it, I just need to set out a primal scream. Ah! Okay, carry on.
As they pulled into the airport, it's only one to go, They drove past a textile maker who'd fallen into the icy Hudson River and just climbed out. "Look, darling," said Lou Reed, "it's a cold and wet weaver." But that was worth the wait. A cold and wet weaver.
I resign.
Who says I don't use my degree?
Oh, no. How many was that?
31.
I reckon at least three of those are completely inadmissible, aren't they?
Which ones?
I'm not going back over it. I just think three of them were completely ridiculous, although I will give you cold and wet weaver, and there are a couple of other absolute gems in there as well. But I don't want this in any way, like occasional positive comment. I don't want you to see that as encouragement. I remain, as I do after every run of puns, hoping that it will never happen again.
Right.
Whilst knowing it is likely to.
Yep. Bugle feature section now, and drinking. Now, there's some very disturbing news, John, that's come out of the scientific community.
Yep.
Saying that coffee may be pointless as a pick-me-up if you drink too much of it.
If that's true, we're both completely screwed, aren't
we? Yeah. Well, because when I need something else. I'm going to need something else to get me out of bed in the morning. I've tried everything. Yep. Espresso, double espresso, triple espresso, double espresso, then a triple espresso. Nice. I've tried children, and still no luck. Yep. Nothing. Unless there is a verifiable fire, an audible insect, or some top-quality sport on television. It's a real struggle getting out of bed.
That's the only incentive, isn't it? Also, I'll admit it. Coffee is a substance I have a genuine problem with. I can say that here, in a safe, supportive environment, especially with someone who has, maybe probably an equal problem. Now, the perfect demonstration of this is at work, Andy, we have these coffee shot containers, like those little cartons of milk. What do you call those, what you put in your coffee? Like the little cartons.
I don't know if they have a name. Chris.
Do those little cartons of milk have a
name? Like the little things, the little plastic
things.
What are they called?
They must have a specific name.
Find out, Chris.
Otherwise you couldn't order
it. Yeah, leave it with me.
Right. Great. God, what a great resource, Chris. It's like a human Wikipedia. Always having actual Wikipedia, but a human to go and type it in.
Yeah, he is a human with Wikipedia.
Yeah, they were sent to work, these like coffee shots, by some company. Essentially, I think it was a joke. Basically, it was that you could pour one into your coffee instead of milk. Right. So you had double coffee in a single coffee cup. Now, I didn't think that was at all funny. I thought that was just a very clever, very dangerous idea. Yeah. So I gradually, single-handedly, worked my way through that entire box, Andy, until I had to accept that I was going to have to do something about my coffee addiction. Have you ever tried to stop or go cold turkey from coffee?
Well, no, not fully. I mean, I have cut down. I used to be on about, I don't know, 6 to 8 double espressos a day.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it must have been 10 or 15 years since I didn't have at least 50% coffee in my bloodstream.
Yeah.
And around about 40% tea as well. Yeah. So, it's a bit worrying, this research, if it doesn't actually work. I've been living a lie, John.
Right.
Although, I mean, the research said that if you drink lots of coffee, you'll feel drowsy if you stop. But again, do you feel drowsy because you're stopping, or is drowsiness just your basic state of existence?
Right.
I mean, what are these scientists...
I think on this particular issue, they need to shut the f*** up, Andy, and just let people enjoy their coffee.
It's none of their business. It's absolutely not. If it wasn't for
coffee... Stay out of it! Stop playing God!
If it wasn't for coffee, no one would ever get up in the morning. That's all I'm saying. The economy would suffer.
Milk jiggers.
No, you're kidding me.
Milk jiggers.
From multiple online sources, they are called jiggers. Jiggers. J-I-G-G-E-R-S.
Milk jiggers. Didn't he play harmonica on one of Muddy Waters' early 60s albums? He had Buddy Guy on guitar on Milk Jiggers.
Oh, thank you, Chris. That's a bit of knowledge that I want.
Anytime.
So,
I'll take you up on that.
Your emails now, and this one comes from Dr. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, apparently. Though his email suggests that might not be entirely true. He writes, "Dear John and Andy, on the subject cricket bats, you have my full, undivided attention. I was struck by your question about the size of the oil spill in cricket bats. Assuming that the cricket bat is 2 inches thick, 4.75 inches wide, and 22.5 inches tall from toe to shoulder, and that the handle is 11 inches long and 1 inch in diameter, the volume of a cricket bat is approximately 0.973 gallons. Thus, using the US Geological Survey's estimate of 500,000 to 800,000 gallons spilled per day, estimate as of May 27th in brackets, we can calculate some vitally important statistics. For the sake of simplicity, only the higher estimate will be used from now on. Every day, 822,247 cricket bats could be fashioned out of the oil. If these bats generated in one day were laid handle to toe, they would stretch 435 miles. This is enough cricket bats to stretch from London to Paris and back, a total distance of 422 miles, or, if you prefer, for our North American listeners, the distance from Boston to Toronto, brackets, 430 miles.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Or, as of May the 1st, 43 days after the start of the oil spill, there would be enough cricket bats to stretch from New York to London 5.4 times, or from Caracas, Venezuela, home of Hugo Chavez, to Pyongyang, North Korea, home of Kim Jong-il, and back. Or from Tripoli, Libya, home of Colonel Gaddafi, to Harare, Zimbabwe, home of Robert Mugabe, 5 times. I hope this puts this disaster into better perspective for all of the listeners, except for the Americans, who probably think that a cricket bat is a terrifying, flying, blood-sucking mammal that rubs its legs together to make chirping sounds at night. Sincerely, Dr. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, brackets, and yes, he does have a doctorate in engineering. So it could, well, I guess it could have been
right
from him, although his prose style is not quite as inflammatory as you'd expect from
I love everything about that email, Andy. Everything about it. I love the joke at the end about cricket bats. I love the intensity and the amount of statistics. And I love the fact that he hasn't even said who it's from. That is, what a great email.
Superb effort from Ahmadinejad. Well done. Thanks very much for listening.
And the only thing to beat that is two amazing paintings that have been done of us, Andy, from Miss Kendall Helland, who says, "Yo!" And this is what she starts off with, a side point saying, "I'd like to give mad props to Jack and Drew in the mornings and the crew at WQRS Sheboygan. Sheboygan! Although your appearance at the county fair was underwhelming, I spent over half an hour in the parking lot honking at your van and I didn't get any response. Where's my free T-shirt? What the f***? Come on, WQRS Sheboygan. I'm pretty clear that you've written promises there that your T-shirts can't cash." Anyway, she goes on to say, "As a student, I found your infotainment broadcast to be an exceptional study aid. I'm an art student, I think you can see where this is going, and I've used your lovely visages to my own personal gain, including a scholarship and entrance into a difficult class. As my muses, I feel it's necessary to share you two and your talisman-like properties with the world and encourage other students to follow my lead. Anyone could do it. Be creative. I suggest intensely studying a headshot for 10-plus hours for maximum bugle absorption." You poor, poor, poor individual. "Do it," she says. "Things are looking up for me. Just this morning, I was offered a free size increase on my coffee because the barrister screwed up. I can smell success. Much love and consternation. Ms. Kendall Helland, Madison, Wisconsin." Well, I mean, listen, there's no greater prize in life than a free coffee size upgrade. But these paintings are absolutely amazing, Andy. This is above and beyond, "I've drawn a picture of you." I'm in a field of sheep.
Yep.
And you are on your knees holding a cuddly toy in front of a nurse.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Well, I don't know quite what episode from my life that is supposed to
represent. Any random episode, Andy. Yeah. You're constantly begging with nurses. Well, it's begging, I guess, to just a please, can I deliver another child, please?
Maybe please. It's that, yeah. So I showed the picture to my wife, and she asked the not illegitimate question, "Why has she painted you on your knees looking up at a nurse?"
Yeah.
And I searched deep within myself, and I could not answer that question.
Your face is great, though, isn't it, Andy? Because there's some concern, there's a questioning to it. You're very racked with emotion.
Yeah.
Whereas I seem quite serene in the middle of a field of sheep, and I think I would be as well.
Do you think so?
Well, I just think sheep, I don't fear sheep, Andy.
They're your natural constituency in many ways.
I don't fear them, yeah. I've got no quarrel with sheep. Yeah. So we'll put them online, assuming that's okay. Do email in if that's not okay. thank you so much. Absolutely phenomenal effort. Right up there with the Delonte West remix. the $99 wine and dine. They'll be on the Bugle's Facebook page, and they're worth a look. They're amazing.
Now, this email comes from Sue O'Reilly, who writes on the subject, the southernmost bugler. Dear the Bugle, greetings from, can you guess where, John? Where might be the southernmost place you might find a bugler?
Well, I mean, I guess probably Mexico.
Mexico, yeah, maybe. Well, I mean, that's about as far south as your sphere of consciousness now you're an American goes, I guess.
Well, is there anything lower than that? No.
In fact, greetings from the Antarctic.
Holy shit!
I'm in the middle of an isolated 8-month winter season at Amundsen Scott South Pole Station. I don't know, what kind of winter season? Is that a pantomime? Long-running pantomime?
Yeah.
Possibly the world's safest location from zombie attack, unless Captain Lawrence Oates manages to haul his frozen British carcass to our station's door.
Yeah.
It's possible.
It is possible.
It's possible.
Just,
you know, in fact,
keep a musket by your bed.
The carcass of Captain Oates featured in
our
radio show, The Department.
That's right.
Yeah. Nice it's reference. Possible. I have been working through the entire run of the Bugle as I hike around wearing multiple layers of heavy clothing. And I leave it... I think that's what Captain Oates was doing as well. I think that's what drove him around.
They call it snow madness.
And I'll leave it to you to decide whether this soundtrack makes the frigid, unending darkness more or less bearable. However, whilst listening to Bugle 93, I did momentarily lose the ability to navigate snowdrifts due to uncontrollable laughter when the song Build Me Up Buttercup was being recited and then abruptly shouted into my ears. Congratulations, Mrs. Altman and Oliver, for you have reached down to the very bottom of the planet and knocked a person flat on her face in minus 70 degrees Celsius temperatures. I hope you're both very proud. Well, thanks, Sue. Thanks for listening, and do tell all the polar bears and penguins that you meet.
I think that this is a landmark moment, Andy, that we have a bugler in the Antarctic. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's great that this kind of shows how technology progresses. First, you know, we can get someone to explore that region.
Yeah.
Then we can set up 8-month habitation periods, and then we can entertain them with such unremitting bullshit. Yeah. So for you, Sue O'Reilly, here is a personal blast of Fill Me Up Buttercup to warm you up in those minus 70 degree temperatures. Why don't you fill me up?
Fill me up.
Buttercup, won't you let me down?
Let me down.
Pull me around. I need you.
I need you.
More than anyone, baby. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
There you go.
Hope you're having a nice day, Sue.
Hope the weather's good.
What a phenomenal three emails that is, Andy.
Yeah, super emails. One of the all-time classics. So do keep your emails flooding into thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. You can also follow The Bugle, of course, on the Bugle Twitter feed, which has cracked 5,000 followers, John. That is more than Jesus had in his lifetime.
That's true.
Yeah, 12, I think. 12 that are officially registered, anyway.
Yeah, and one of those tried to unfollow at the last minute.
That's at Hello Buglers for all your latest bullshit news. No time for sport this week. That's how good those emails were. They've destroyed all sport, John.
It's the only thing that I think is acceptable, Andy, for bumping a sports section. Two magnificent paintings, some bullshit cricket match statistics, and the news that the Bugle is going on in the Antarctic.
Thanks to any Buglers who came to see my two-night partially sold-out run at the Soho Theatre last weekend, which I forgot to mention on the Bugle. Which,
attaboy, Andy.
Turned my ruthless self-promotion. Managing to help me to some nicely empty seats. But thanks to those who come. If you missed it and you want... I'm doing a charity gig on Monday for the human rights group Reprieve at the Lyceum in London. Other acts include Stuart Lee, Phil Jupitus, Ed Byrne, and your ex-missus, John Izzy Sutty.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
What a great lineup that is. At least now you said X, that's now in my head. There you go. I'm not denying she was my ex, Mrs. Andy.
Yeah.
She was, you know.
So that's a historically verifiable fact.
We had some wonderful years together.
Well,
no malice either side.
So that's it. Just time for this week's ironic acronyms: the Society for the Extension of Celibacy, Chastity and Singleness, or sex; the Virginia Organisation for the Moderation of Inebriating Toxins, that's vomit; and the British Institute of Genuine Women Against Prosthetic Surgery, Big Waps. This bugle was brought to you in association with the campaign for the legal prosecution of... Oh, no, that's, that hasn't finished that joke. Forget that. Forget that.
Perfect. Not a better way to end, Andy.
That's it.
The petering out. We'll speak to you next week, Buglers.
Bye-bye.
Bugle out.
This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.